Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
You know your business better than anyone. So when you need finance to grow, you deserve a lender who understands too. Responsible finance providers look at the whole picture, the story behind the numbers, your plan and what you want to achieve. Our fair, flexible finance, decided by real people, not a computer, helps thousands of businesses every year. Find out more at findingfinance.org.uk. Finding Finance is a trading style of the Community Development Finance Association, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. A regulated credit broker and not a lender. We provide information only in respect of community development finance institutions and other finance providers, which may be available to you from our approved panel of lenders. Finding Finance. .org.uk.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Thank goodness it's folk. Sheffield Live's weekly folk programme, broadcasting to the world. With Sam Hindley and James Fagan. Every Friday at 10 a.m.
Welcome back to Thank Goodness It's Folk with me, James Fagan. Hope you enjoyed the first half looking at the music and lives of Dolores Keane and Dave Shepherd. In the second half, we're going to celebrate the Irish singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist and painter Barry Kerr, who a few nights ago won the inaugural Folk Album of the Year award for his record that came out in 2025 called Curlew's Cry. The award was announced on St. Patrick's Day, very appropriately. Among other highlights of the night were an incredible rendition by Peggy Seeger, now in her 90s, of The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, which was an absolute showstopper. There were many, many fine records, 12 very fine records nominated, but it was Barry Kerr who won the award being a partnership between Sound Roots and Folk on Foot, honouring exceptional folk roots and acoustic music albums from Britain and Ireland. And my colleague, Sam Hindley, who is not with me this week, was taking a break this week because he's so busy, because he's been part of the 12 expert industry professionals who are judging that award. So, Sam, an excellent choice from all of you. This album is fantastic. And we're about to speak to Barry Kerr from Birmingham as he makes his way down to London and then back to his home in Connemara. But let's hear the title track from his album Curlew's Cry, which, as I said, has just won the inaugural Folk Album of the Year for 2025. Here's Barry, and then we'll have a chat.
The winterfowl have left us. They haven't come this year. No midnight swans are calling. Those lovers lost, I fear. No plover is a nesting. The bog has gone to plow. The crying of a curlew is but a memory now. No long line set at evening in my cot with salmon sky. No trout are real for mourning me. The catch it has run dry. Those ghosts will haunt our children, a wailing in the night, a distant cry from times gone by, an omen of our plight. For who will heal the water of our sacred holy well? not landlord, thief, or absentee, with nothing left to sell. I have a premonition when we call upon our own to hear on high a curlew's cry and remember where we're from. To restore this wondrous garden, our connection to the earth, to rid the need for waste and greed, and know what we are worth.
That was Curlew's Cry, the title track from the Folk Album of the Year at the new Folk on Foot-led awards. And Barry Kerr is the inaugural winner of the new Folk Album of the Year award. Barry, congratulations. It's lovely to hear this news. And you must be, well, I won't put words into your mouth. Tell me what that feels like.
It's quite a shock, to be honest, James. I'm really honoured and delighted that I got the shout for it, and you know, let alone get the trophy. Yeah, it's brilliant, really, and I don't think I've quite got the terms of it yet. You know, I think when I go home, well, after it's a few gigs, settle in. You know,
it is great news. It's a great record, obviously, but it's an interesting story as well for me. I've known you a long time, and I've had the joy of playing music with you on the road in the Cara Dillon Band years ago. And one thing that struck me then, and has struck me since I met you, is that this album is just part of a much broader picture of things that you've been involved in creatively since you were very young. For people who don't know your work yet, and I'm sure that most of my listeners will have heard you on this show before because we've been playing you in the lead up to the awards, but also with each of your new releases. People will know that you're a very distinguished and accomplished Ilan Piper. You play the flute beautifully. You're a multi-instrumentalist. You are a painter. In fact, I have bought a painting from you, which I gave to my mum for a significant birthday, a beautiful picture of Kinvara. This just is, it's disgusting, really, to add to the list with an award for the best album in all of the albums considered last year in folk music in Britain and Ireland, and you've won it. What's your secret? Why are you so good at so many different things, Barry?
I misspent youth. A lot of days mitching off school, I think. Being attached to one instrument or another. I was lucky that I grew up in a house where music and anything creative was, you know, encouraged and promoted. And I think when my parents knew that I wanted to go with it, they just let me at it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't thank them enough, really, for that. And traveling to flowers and festivals, you know, that was our, they were summer holidays, really, and it all kind of seeped in. And I think when I think about, you know, the broad, you know, spectrum, I suppose, of what I do, a lot of it, you know, they're all intimately related. Like, it's not that I'm jumping, you know, from one, you know, it's all really inspired by the same things, you know.
Well, that's easy enough to say, Barry, but, I mean, Liam O'Flynn, one of your great mentors, you know, I don't remember him making a great singer-songwriter album particularly. It is a bit unusual to be so specialised, and it begs the question to me, have you found your true calling? I know they're all interconnected, but how does being a now award-winning singer-songwriter and interpreter of traditional songs with a guitar compare, for example, to you know, your intimate study, for example, of the Ilan Pipes and the work of Liam O'Flynn and others, or how does it compare to your interest in painting? I know they're creatively linked, but this does seem, it does seem different in some way.
Yeah, the thing, and I love song, and I love traditional song. It has always been, you know, it's definitely been to the, you know, I've always been at it, you know, it's not
sure
like that I've just come to this place. Mm. You know, I've been writing songs from my late teens and early 20s. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm very much, you know, I might have been in a situation where I was playing in a band, say with yourself and Carol, and, you know, the pipes and the flute would have been the thing, you know. But in the background, I was always writing and always singing.
Right.
And I'm taking inspiration from, you know, singers like yourself and Cara and all, you know, all of that was seeping in, I think, along the road, like, you know. So it has been a bit of a journey, all right, and I'm delighted, like, you know. But I think the songwriting definitely has, it seems to be coming, you know, the thing, you know. And I'm delighted about that because I really enjoy it. And
absolutely.
This record kind of, it came from a very personal kind of place, and I put my heart and soul into it.
Sure.
And all along the way, I've had different versions of it, and, you know, and I don't think I've been truly happy with anything that,
yeah,
you know, I'd put out before, but with this one, I knew what I wanted from it, which is probably different.
Sure. And I think that's a really good point, that you know, you may live with these songs or the ideas for a long time, but it's another thing putting them together into a final thing. You know, it's a bit like with a painting, you can go back and you can add things, you can change a painting, but this is, once you put this Curlew's Cry out there in this form, it's kind of stuck in amber in a way, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. And I had recorded some stuff, you know, over the last few years that didn't, you know, that could have made it to an album but didn't, and, you know, it's because I wasn't so sure about it, but this yeah. stuff is, I'm happy and with it, and I
hope so. You should be.
Yeah.
One of the things that the judging panel or whatever they call themselves, the 12 distinguished industry professionals who come together to decide, and they had a very long list, about 150 mm-hmm. records to consider this year. One of the things they commented on your record was the mood and the feeling that it holds you. That must be a very deliberate decision when you're making a record to create and hold a mood.
Yeah, that was, when I came to it, I had the fortune of having a chat with Jerry O'Byrne, the great guitar player.
Yeah, indeed.
And Jerry was living in Dingle, is still living in Dingle, and I happened to be up and down a lot. And I had heard Jerry's album, Swimming with Horses, you know, and it's a fabulous album for anybody who hasn't heard it. And I had a chat with, and he recorded it himself and produced it himself. And I just loved the sound of it, you know, and I just loved the integrity in it. And I went to Jerry and I said, look, Jerry, I don't know how to do this, but I think I know what I want to hear.
Mm.
And I want it to be me. I want to be able to recreate it when I'm out in the road. I want it to sound like me, you know. I don't want too many bells and whistles. I don't want any tricks. Would you come in and give me a hand with it, you know?
Well, he's done an amazing job with you, and I think one of the first things I noticed was the avoidance of some things that might have seemed obvious to other people but wouldn't have perhaps drawn you in so much. For example, you could have put pipe solos of the highest quality all over this record if you'd wanted, and many people would if they could do both and they have the studio to do it, they would fill the album with some of the instruments you're capable of playing. You've deliberately avoided doing that, haven't you?
I did, yeah. And I wanted the songs to kind of speak. I didn't want it, you know, to be common, you know, it's Barry Kerr the piper, you know, it's really about his pipes or not, it's not about the words, or it's really about the flute, or, you know,
yeah.
I didn't want the distractions of that, if you know what I mean.
Totally.
And plus, the more we sat in the studio, the more it became evident that it was going to be very sparse and very about the vocal and about the lyrics, you know.
Can I ask you, Barry, were you at any point channeling Handful of Earth? Just let's get it on record, because it certainly, it touches, for me, it touches on it in terms of the combination.
Without a doubt, you know, it's, you know, Dick's that catalogue is, you know, always on, you know, it's I love that album for that particular reason. It's so, you know, it's also sparse and kind of anything that happens in an album is it's really memorable and
definitely.
And it's one of those things that you kind of learn inside out or something in your memory. And I love that. And I thought back to all of the music that really has stuck with me over the years. There wasn't too much, you know, fancy stuff going on. You know, it was really about how meaningful or whatever, you know, how that comes across, you know.
Yeah. Barry, I've always associated with your hometowns and the Armagh area, but I understand you live in Connemara now. How long have you been away from Armagh?
Well, I was in Dublin for a couple of years too. Then we moved over just after COVID there. With Sheila, my wife is from Connemara. She's a piano singer and harpist, among other things as well. But we're living there now full time, and it's fabulous. I love it.
It certainly is. How does the geography of Connemara interact with your creative work?
Really does. I think I wake up every day and I don't have to go too far for inspiration, really, you know.
Sure.
It's just outside the window. And what I've took from Connemara more than anything is there's a real kind of sense of community, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody knows each other and kind of helps each other out. And and especially with the music, it's like, well, that's the guy, he plays the flute, and, you know, you're automatically kind of given a job, you know. And I like that about it. It's really nice. I'm trying my damnedest to learn the Gaelic at the minute, you know. And so I think that's my challenge now. I've been trying to be fluent for years, but I'm hopefully getting there now. So,
good on you. That's a challenge well worth taking on, isn't it? I have no doubt that you will you'll get there, because you do seem to achieve what you set your mind to. I'm sure you would maybe say it's not always been that easy, and it's not always not always worked out. Mm-hmm. But you certainly have an aptitude for a variety of things, Barry. It's been a seismic week in Irish music, and I did warn you that I was going to ask you for some thoughts about the passing of Dolores Keane, who we are celebrating in other sections of this program today, and the outpouring of grief, but also love and celebration for. Truly, I mean, it's no cliche to say that she is one of the great voices of Irish music, and it was a great surprise to people. She was only 72, and it's a huge loss, isn't it?
It really is. She was, you know, mega. I think she was my favorite out of everyone.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was young, my dad had all these recordings that were recorded from the telly, you know, and on VHS. There were loads of bits and bobs of Dolores, you know.
Yeah.
And but there were a couple of standout things that have carried me through the whole journey of this music life. And if you remember those recordings of her with Real Union.
I do.
And they're now on YouTube, which is fabulous, because I can show my kids them and they're there forever now. And it's I think they're some of the best clips on the actual internet, you know. Amazing. She was so good, and she carried traditional song in such a, you know, it was just as real as it gets, you know.
Yeah.
And unadulterated, as real as it gets, with this voice that was just so powerful and beautiful, and
definitely
she'd be so missed, you know. But thankfully we had her. That's all I can say.
That's right. I was saying the same thing the other day. I just feel very glad to have been in her time and had the opportunity to see her a couple of times. She came out to Australia with John Faulkner on several occasions, and she was on the famous Guinness tours on a good number of times. Saw her with the Dannon as well in those days, and she did. She set every room alight with her not just her voice, but she was a powerful persona as well to be in a room with, wasn't she?
Really, really. And I got a great traditional musician as well, you know.
That's it.
Kind of overlooked as well. Like she could play tunes too.
She certainly could. Those first albums are almost 50% flute tunes, and she was good too.
Yeah, but really good. Mm. She carried songs from, you know, she would go outside of her area, like she was picking songs up off Cahill McConnell, and a lot of real Ulster stuff as well, which I loved about her. Mm. You know, she kind of tapped into our neck of the woods, you know, with her songs, and when she was picking songs. And
I always thought it was quite ironic that, you know, she got so well known for Caledonia, and it was a bit like, well, she could sing the phone book, let's face it. No disrespect to the song, and it's been huge for Dougie McLean, but it was huge for her as well, and I do wonder sometimes what she made of that song just going so big on her, you know?
Yeah, yeah. it's a big loss, you know. It really
is. It certainly is, Barry. Barry, thank you for sharing those thoughts about Dolores. I'm going to play another track from your record to sort of wind this little section up. So to just come back to Curlew's Cry, you've talked a little bit about your songwriting and the inspirations behind it. The album does have some of your favourite trad stuff on it as well, but overarching is your own work. Tell us about Life on the Edge, the song we're going to hear now.
Yeah, Life on the Edge, again, came out of my visits down to Dingle, down to Dingle Peninsula. And along that route down there, there's a lot of ancient kind of architecture, like these beehive huts that were built by pilgrims, you know, at the beginning of, you know, Christianity almost. And, and you know, the people came there to kind of to pray and at the edge of the world, you know.
Right? Yeah.
And like Skelly, there were monks out there, and it actually featured in Star Wars, I think, recently. But it's that song is about that idea of being at the edge of the world, you know, and you know, with the energy of the sea. And it's also about the people who lived on the Blasket Islands who had to leave, you know, because in the 40s and 50s when the government kind of evicted them off their island, and that very sad story. But it's about finding something in wild places, you know, which I love, and continue to seek out these places in my life, you know.
Indeed, and it's lovely to, if people want to immerse themselves in that, just all they need to do is listen to Curlew's Cry, because it is a very immersive experience. And for people who haven't yet been to Ireland, I hope this provides inspiration to them to come and see the place that you live and the place you call home. It's certainly somewhere I come as often as I can. Barry, I would love to see you again soon, and maybe we can have a tune somewhere on this side or that when you're around again.
Definitely, James, we'll do that. For sure. And I think I'll be over a bit more often these days.
I think you might be. Congratulations, Barry. It's great news for you and for your family. It's great news for the musicians who you had involved with the record as well. And it's great news for English, the scene here in England, because I'm quite sure you're right. I think you will be coming to play over here more now. And that's great news. And we wish you well, but we will keep coming to Ireland as well.
Do that. Appreciate it, James.
Great. Good on you, Barry. Thanks for being part of our show today.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you. This is Barry Kerr from his new album Curlew's Cry with Life on the Edge.
Silence surrounds and spirits abide where the veil of reality stands. I'll shelter a while among stones that were piled by pilgrim devoted within. The last of their kind, the stars that align, see them ne'er to return. The work of their hands in monuments stand, weathered by gale and sun. Oh, I long for a life on the edge, worn by wind and sea. Waking dream of a life on the edge, again to be. They came, their words still remain in some sign by the sea. The artists, they stood, they saw it was good and found their sanctuary. Defined by the sea, all those who were free to walk the ocean waves with canvas and gold. They rode from the shore, from a life they tried to save. How I long for a life on the edge, worn by wind and sea. A waking dream of a life on the edge, again to be.
band of our tribe swept out on a tide, cast away at sea. But words we reclaim, remembering our name, to cherish the visionary. Oh, I long for a life on the edge, worn by wind and sea. Waking dream of a life on the edge, again to be. Thank you.
That's Laura Jane Wilkie and Ian Carr, and they are about to hit the road with that fabulous, fabulous album of Laura Wilkie's called Vent, which Ian helped her record. They toured it last year, and they're touring it again in April. I'm telling you this because I really, really want you to buy tickets if you are in Sheffield to go and see them at the Greystones on April the 17th. It's going to be a magnificent gig and one you should definitely go to. Beautiful album full of music inspired by the walking songs of women workers in Scotland. And that is something that Laura Jane Wilkie's been looking into extensively since she left the Canaris Quintet to pursue a solo career. I say solo, her duo with Ian Carr is what's on tour, and they are fabulous together. You can find out more by looking at Laura Jane Wilkie's social media or website, but I can tell you right now that the first gig is a Live to Your Living Room gig on April the 11th, so if you can't make it out to one of the following venues, you can stream them live into your living room. If you can see them, I will tell you that they are going to be in, over the course of the tour, Inverness, Dingwall, Arisaig, Dundee, Penrith, Sheffield, as I mentioned, on the 17th of April, Southport, Oswestry, London, Edmund Byers, Carradale, Moffat, Glasgow, Newcastle, Edinburgh, Colourcoats, Bristol, and finishing in Taunton. Wonderful, wonderful music. I really hope you enjoyed that. I've got a great child ballad for you this week. It's called The Duke of Athol's Nurse, and I'm going to play it to you after the jingle.
Friday's child, that's me.
A child ballad every Friday.
We're up to child ballad 212, which I know you all know because you're paying attention. We had a lovely rendition last week of child ballad 211 set by Kathy Tattersfield, and got lots of compliments about that, Kathy. Nikki writes how wonderful it was to hear your interpretation and how impressed he was with the depth of research that you put in to make that version sit together so nicely. And he commented on how moving the story was as well. This week's is more a comic song, also in Scotland. And my favourite version by far is that sung by Frankie Armstrong on her 1975 album on topic called Songs and Ballads. In fact, it's the first track. She called it Little Duke Arthur's Nurse. And I'm going to read you Bert Lloyd's excellent sleeve note on it, because it says everything that I would have wanted to tell you about it. A jokey tale versified into a ballad balanced on a razor edge of violence. Francis James Child called it The Duke of Athol's Nurse, and it's number 212 in his collection. 70 or 80 years ago, it was still fairly common in Scotland, and Gavin Grieg recorded 7 versions in Aberdeenshire, mostly from women. This anglicised set of words is based mainly on the version sung to Grieg by Alexander Robb, the school caretaker at New Deer, where Grieg lived. We're used to songs in which women dress as men. Those in which men are the cross-dressers are rare. Frankie Armstrong remarks that whereas women put on men's array for the sake of adventure and in search of wider horizons, the men merely end up looking silly. Such songs tell us a lot about the relative status of the sexes, she says. Well, Frankie, I think that's a very perceptive comment about the inherent sexism of the child ballads in parts, but they are wonderful songs to sing, and nobody sings this better than Frankie Armstrong. Let's hear her rendition of child ballad 212, Little Duke Arthur's Nurse.
Young Johnny rode out on a May morning with his buckles and bridles ringing, and as he rode by the castle wall, he's heard a sweet voice singing. Oh, I'm the little Duke Arthur's nurse, and the post do well become me, but I'd give both of me gay gold rings for a sight and a kiss of me Johnny. If you're the little Duke Arthur's nurse, you're my sweetheart, so bonny. Keep well for the gay gold rings, and you'll get to sightsee a Johnny. Well, he's leaned over his saddle bow, and he's give a sweet kiss to her, saying, you have me heart, but another has me hand, so what good can I do ya? She says, if I have your heart, but another has your hand, these words are fair undone me. So let's make a time when we'll meet again, and then in love you can twine me. So go you down to yon tavern house, where the welcoming lights are beckoning, and sure as I'm a woman true, I come love and pay you your reckoning. Well, he's fed not the cheer of the whippy beer, and the wine he's kept them pouring, and every glass he's drank to the last that was coming to him in the morning. And he's looked out of a shut window a little before the dawn of, and there come running up brothers three with their naked swords all a-drawn of. Oh, landlady, landlady, what shall I do? For me life's not worth a halfpenny. For she that was to lie with me has sent her brothers to slay me. She's taken off her petticoats, likewise the gown and apron. She's taken the kerchief off of her head, and she's let young Johnny to the baking. I should give him a suit of a female clothes, and he's made a pretty fine maiden. And the birds never sang so sweet in the tree as young Johnny sang at the baking. And when they stood at the kitchen door, they have rattled their swords about it. And when they stood on the kitchen floor, so loudly there they shouted, oh, did you have a lodger here last night, drunk till the dawn was beckoning? Come show us the room where the lodger is in, for we've come to settle his reckoning. There come a stranger here last night, but not to drink till the morning. He called for a pint and he paid ere he left. He was long gone, John, near the dawning. They stabbed the feather beds around and about, and the curtains their swords went raking. And as they run in and as they run out, they said, ha, funny lassie, you're baking. And one of them being in a very merry mood, to young Johnny said to talking. The woman took a foot and she gave him such a kick, saying, get on, Nanny, with your baking. And I, as the landlady ran in and out, she had scolded till her ears were aching. She said, I've had this many a maid, but none the likes of you with the baking. They turned the house up, they turned it down, the crockery and platters breaking. And every one of them, as they left that inn, they kissed the bonny lass that are baking.
Thank you.
Trouble in the Kitchen, one of the best Irish bands to come out of any country, let alone Australia, from where they hail. And I'm playing them because I've just heard the news that Trouble in the Kitchen are going to reform and come together to play at the National Folk Festival in Canberra at Easter. And the reason they're doing that is that I can also announce the rather sad news that Nancy Kerr and myself are not going to be able to go. We were booked to be there at Easter, and we were also going to be playing with my family, the Fagans, at the National Folk Festival. And that has been in the diary for a year, and the flights were all booked. And unfortunately, because of the situation in the Persian Gulf, we're unable to go. Our flights were through the UAE, and we've not been able to reroute. So Nancy and myself and the boys will be staying in Sheffield at Easter, and unfortunately that means we won't be at the National Folk Festival. This is extremely sad news, and I'm really quite sad I won't be seeing my family. So I'm going to have to make up for it later this year by going over to see them, and hopefully we'll be able to go over and do these gigs that we so desperately want to do with my family and with Nancy next Easter. But in the meantime, I've heard the excellent news that Trouble in the Kitchen have been invited and have stepped up to the challenge of reforming the band, especially for this occasion, and they're going to do some more gigs as well, I'm sure. Trouble in the Kitchen, that comes from their wonderful album, The Next Turn, and that was the Road to Port Fairy set of reels. The guitarist you heard on that track is also one of the two singers in the band. I would say the key singer, and she is Kate Burke. She's just recently released a solo album, which I've played a track from already on the program, but I want to go back to one of Kate's seminal works. I think possibly it may go down as Kate's most lasting contribution to traditional music in Australia. She wrote a chorus for the traditional song, The Wreck of the Dandenong, and that chorus is so now regarded as part of the song that I don't think I've heard it sung without Kate's composed chorus since. Bruce Molsky got hold of it and recorded it, Mosaic recorded it, and many others since then. But it goes back to the lovely voice and great composition skills of Kate Burke, who is part of Trouble in the Kitchen, but will also be appearing in our place at the National Folk Festival. It's delightful news for fans of the band. It's delightful news for fans of Kate Burke. I'm just very sorry that we won't be there to see it or to sing for our friends and family and fans in Australia. But Trouble in the Kitchen, stepping into the breach, and I'm going to play now from the Ruth Hazelton and Kate Burke album, 1,000 Miles or More, Wreck of the Dandenong, led by the writer of the chorus, Kate Burke.
Oh, wild and furious blew the blast, and the clouds were hanging round. When the Dandenong from Melbourne sailed to Newcastle Port was bound. She had 83 poor souls on board. Through the storm she cleaved her way. When it's sad to relate of her terrible fate, 'twas just off Jarvis Bay. And I dream of you, I dream of sleep, I dream of being warm. Through the night I have to sail to brave this raging storm. As they came crashing in, which filled them with dismay. All hands on board did all they could, till at length all hope was gone. And they hoisted a signal of distress on board of the Dandenong. It was not long till a bark risk and lively crew came bearing down, and the captain cried, "We'll see what we can do." Came bearing down with might and main, in spite of land or wave. They did all they could, as sailors would, those precious lives to save. And I dream of you, I dream of sleep, I dream of being warm, and I pray the sea will leave me be to see. Tried to reach that kind and friendly bark, and numbers of their lives were saved, but the night came on pitch dark. What mortal man then could do more when the storm increased on strong? Then the rest now sleep in the briny deep along with the damned and all.
Sent me, and his ruby lips, they being soft and fine, oh, it's many's the time they've been pressed to mine. And I wish in vain I wish I was a maiden again. But a maid again I shall never more be, till apples do grow on an orange tree.
That's Nick Hart and Tom Moore, who are about to go on tour in the UK, playing the title track from their 2023 album, The Colour of Amber, a song they learnt, like many others, from the incredible Romany singer collected in 1975 in the Brighton area, Mary Ann Haynes. That is a song so associated with her. But I think that's my favourite version that I've ever heard of the song, not recorded by Mary Ann Haynes, and it's lovely. You heard on that Tom Moore on viola and Nick Hart singing and playing tenor viol, and the album is fantastic. We've played it on the show several times, and it continued to do so. The Sheffield gig, if you're listening in Sheffield, will be at Shakespeare's on the 1st of April, but you can also catch them in Beccles on the 29th of March, 2nd of April, Sowerby Bridge, 3rd of April, Cumberland Arms in Newcastle, 8th of April, Cornish Bank in Falmouth, the 9th of April, the Falcon Hotel Imbued, the 10th of April, Folk Society Bridport, 11th of April, Totnes at Things Happen Here. That's a good name for a venue, isn't it? Things Happen Here. 12th of April, Bristol at Bristol Folk House. They'll be in Stroud at the Prince Albert on the 13th of April, Margate at the Arts Centre, there at the Arts Club, I should say, in Margate on the 16th of April, London, the Theatre Ship on 17th of April, finishing up at the Fay Folk Rooms in Cambridge on the 19th of April. Nick Hart and Tom Moore, do yourself a favour and go and see them. Here's a former bandmate of Dolores King, Charlie Piggott, with Rowan Piggott.
Oh, rattling, roaring, billy, are he right to the fair, for to sell his fiddle and buy some other wear. But pardon with his fiddle, assaulted blind disease. Rattling, roaring, billy, a welcome lame to me. Oh, will he come sell your fiddle and sell your fiddle so fine? Will he come sell your fiddle and buy a pint of wine? If I were to sell me fiddle, the world would think I was mad, for many's a ranting day that me fiddle and I am fat. As I can buy Cracullen, I can we kick it in. Rattling, roaring, billy, the sitting in yon board in, sitting at yon board in among the company. Rattling, roaring, billy, you're welcome to me.
Thank you so much for your company today on Thank Goodness It's Folk. It's been a real privilege to talk to Andy Cutting about Dave Shepherd, to Barry Kerr about his new album, The Curlew's Cry, and some reminiscences about Dolores Keane as well, and an absolute privilege to listen to the voice of Dolores Keane, with whom we started the program. Sam will be back next week for more Thank Goodness It's Folk, but I'm going to leave the last word to Dolores Keane today, in a wonderful and very, very beloved recording she made with Mary Black and Emmylou Harris of the great Ron Hines of Newfoundland's song Sonny's Dream. And we'll see you next week. I love Dolores' verse in this, as I'm sure you do as well. Take care of each other, and let's hope that the situation looks a little more peaceful wherever you are by the time we meet again.